Thurgood Marshall is a legendary civil rights attorney who's probably best known for his work on the groundbreaking case Brown v. Board of Education and his later time serving as a U.S. Supreme Court justice. But in the late 1940s, Marshall became the lawyer for four young African Americans in Florida who were accused of the abduction and rape of a 17-year-old white girl named Norma Paget. The four became known as the Groveland Boys. The four were found guilty, but Marshall was able to get the convictions overturned by the Supreme Court. That, however, didn't prevent the case from having a tragic ending. Gilbert King wrote about that story in his Pulitzer Prize-winning book, Devil in the Grove, and he's in the Valley today as part of an event at ASU's O'Connor College of Law and presented by the YWCA of Metropolitan Phoenix and the Arizona Thurgood Marshall Inn of Court, and Gilbert King is with me. Gilbert, first, who specifically were the Groveland Boys?
Well, this is a story that just started in 1949, and this young couple, young white couple, went out. They'd already been separated, but they were trying to get their relationship going again. They went out on a date. They were drinking and dancing. And the next thing we know, next morning, Norma Paget, who's a 17-year-old young lady, says that she has been abducted and raped by four African Americans. And so within hours, the Ku Klux Klan rolls into town, starts burning down the black neighborhood of Groveland. And the next thing you know, Sheriff Willis McCall has three of the suspects known, who became to be known as the Groveland Boys, in custody. And so this is this very big, kind of like a To Kill a Mockingbird type trial, or maybe closer to the Scottsboro Boys. And nobody really knows about it. And the defense lawyer was the great Thurgood Marshall.
What was the danger at that point to someone as prominent as Thurgood Marshall? Did that matter, or the fact that he was just a black man, he was in as much danger as anybody else?
He was probably in worse danger because he was trying to really upset race relations, and according to the people in the South. So they saw him as a Northern agitator who's going to force that way of life from the North onto the people of the South. So they despised him, and he was constantly threatened. He would have to go around from house to house in the middle of the night changing locations because the Klan was after him. And this happened constantly when he went down south.
Can we get into Thurgood Marshall's head at that point? One would say, did he really have to venture into this? And yet, knowing the kind of person he was, I guess he felt like, yes, he had to make this kind of impact.
Well, yeah, it was interesting because at the time, you know, at the time of this case is starting, Brown versus Board is also starting. So Brown versus Board of Education is the segregation case, the landmark case, probably the most important case of the 20th century. And Thurgood Marshall was indispensable to the civil rights movement. So even some of his own colleagues were saying, Thurgood, why are you taking these death penalty cases down south when you're being threatened, your life is in danger? We need you for these big, important school cases, housing cases, voting rights cases. And Marshall was really sort of ahead of his time in this, because he would say, these cases are important. These cases save lives. And it was really because nobody had representation for criminal cases like Thurgood Marshall could provide for them. So if you got Thurgood Marshall, you were very lucky and you had a chance. And so Marshall knew that he was often the last line of defense from these victims that would go straight to the electric chair, even if they were innocent.
How long did this whole process go from when he decided to delve into this and then when the case was, in to whatever extent, resolved?
Right. Well, interestingly enough, it started in 1949. The first trial ended. It was just a travesty of justice. They were all convicted, sentenced to the electric chair. Marshall appealed, took it to the U.S. Supreme Court. Naturally, he won that case unanimously before the Supreme Court. Justice Robert Jackson said, in his opinion, he said, this case presents one of the best examples of one of the worst menaces to American justice. So the verdict was thrown out. What's really interesting is this is what really caught my, you know, attention as a writer, is that in 1951, when they were about to do the retrial, the sheriff in the case, Sheriff Willis McCall, drove up to Rayford State Prison to pick up the prisoners and basically executed them on the side of the road. And so that's when the case really exploded into the national consciousness.
I do want to ask you more general questions about Thurgood Marshall. So he was someone who had this enormous impact. And then there are others who will say that once he got to the high court, he was not able to have that kind of impact. Because, of course, we're talking about who's on the side of certain votes and whatnot. Is there any impression you get from whether he ever regretted being on the court because he loved being an attorney who had an impact the way he did?
Well, that's a really great question. I think that Thurgood Marshall would have been happy as a civil rights attorney the rest of his life. But I think there was also a lot of pressure, especially when it's LBJ who's saying, I want you on that Supreme Court. Marshall was a scholar. He was also a very serious lawyer who also knew that this was a great step forward for the race. And so, you know, granted, his early years on the Supreme Court, he was very valuable. I think towards the end, he basically complained that he was just writing dissents.
If Thurgood Marshall were not a young attorney today, but let's say he was in his 40s having an impact, and we're seeing things like we are with some of the relations between certain law enforcement departments and some African Americans and some of the tension that has sort of re-risen, at least publicly, over the last few years. What do you think he would make of it?
You know, I think there's a part of him that would be very disappointed. I also think he was a realist at the time. And I think, you know, when he won Brown versus Board, I don't think he was thinking that that's it. We've, you know, cured race problems in America now that the schools will be mixed, that all the problems will have gone away. Actually, if you look at it today, there's segregation in schools, but it's just a different, it's an economic segregation. And so I think a lot of these challenges would be things that Marshall was sort of aware of, that these battles were never fully over. A lot of the voting rights cases, you know, he won a great case in 1944. Smith versus Allwright, which was the white primary case in Texas. That was a huge, huge legal decision that in the Supreme Court, and it was Marshall's case. But, you know, we've seen a rollback on the voting rights. We've seen it get a little more sophisticated. Of course, blacks can now register to vote and vote, but maybe the polling places won't be within 100 miles of their house, or, you know, maybe you'll have to have identification that a lot of urban blacks do not have. And so I think there's just these new challenges that pop up. And I think Marshall was really aware of that.
Gilbert King is author of the Pulitzer Prize-winning book Devil in the Grove, Thurgood Marshall, The Groveland Boys, and the Dawn of a New America. He's in the Valley as part of an event this evening at ASU's O'Connor College of Law. It's presented by the YWCA of Metropolitan Phoenix and the Arizona Thurgood Marshall Inn of Court. And this is the show.